Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Aaron Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. It's time to meet this week's guest, so grab a coffee and let's start talking success. Hey everyone, welcome back. Yet another episode of Talking Success. A little bit different this week. There's three of us. So we're going to see how this goes. We've done one before, if you remember the ones with Finasa, and there was four on the call and editing was a bit of a nightmare, but we're going to see how we get on today with three of us. We're staying on the theme of payments, but perhaps a slightly different side of payments. And it is something we've discussed certainly in previous episodes with Time Bank and with MasterCard. And we spoke about the point of sale devices. And there's no better experts in this market than two gentlemen that are with me today. And we've got Matt and Graham from Ikoka. Ikoka's headquartered in Durban, which is where, or KwaZulu-Natal, which is where Matt's based. And Graham's dialing in from Joburg. So chaps, lovely to have you here. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking about all things sort of point of sale, the evolution of that, and really how this podcast series or episode came about. So I'd had this conversation about the future of point of sale devices or point of sale solutions with a couple of people that have been, or a couple of guests that have been on. And there was a big sort of focus on soft POS. So this is a point of sale solution that's actually embedded within the mobile phone and in some respects negates the need for having hardware. So I posted something on LinkedIn, and Matt was kind enough to say, "Hey, listen, I'm going to come on. I want to say sort of share our story and sort of where we're going." So it's great to have you guys on, Matt. I'd like to start with you. If you can give a really quick intro in terms of you, the business, and then we'll pass to Graham.
Sure. Thanks, Darren. Thanks for having us on. It's been some time since we connected. I'm Matt. I'm the CEO and one of the co-founders of Ikoka. Business was founded probably 11 years ago now. As you mentioned, is headquartered in KZN, but we've got a team of about 350, 360 people spread out throughout both South Africa, and many of them are actually international employees as well from a product perspective. And we're very much focused on helping SMEs start, manage, and grow their business in SA. We started out trying to solve, I guess, a very specific use case of small business owners, entrepreneurs who are unable to get payment devices or points of sale devices from the big legacy banks. And we saw an opportunity in that space. Fast forward to today, our offering, I guess, has evolved quite a lot. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in quite a bit of detail through the podcast. But we have moved beyond just helping merchants process physical payments. We are now enabling them to process omni-channel payments. So if it's in person or online or payment links or invoice payments, we have quite a broad coverage of different payments use cases we solve for SMEs. But most importantly, helping them solve some of the other big pain points, such as things like funding and working capital, and then also helping them as we grow as a business, moving more into helping them, I guess, really grow their businesses and have the ability to have a platform that they can use to manage their business on a daily basis that will give them insights and training and perspective on kind of how to get to the next level. So yeah, that's my intro. I'll hand over to Graham to intro himself.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Matt. Hey, Darren. As we briefly chatted, my journey into the fintech space is only sort of 18 or 19 months in now. Started my career, spent a lot of, most of my career in the media and entertainment world, building consumer applications on the streaming side of things for MultiChoice, and came across Matt and the team probably 2 years ago now, and decided to join their team in the beginning of 2022. So yeah, I joined the team to, look after the growth side of that business, which involved dealing with a lot of the sales teams and the partnerships and the marketing and branding teams, as well as, how we distribute our devices online and digitally to merchants. And more recently, in the last sort of 4 or 5 months, have taken over the product portfolio. So, Yeah, as Matt said, we're 350 people big now. About 120 of those folks are product design engineering folks. And yeah, I guess my teams now look at, you know, how we build out not only the physical card machine devices, but also all of these peripheral ancillary sort of products and services. So online payments and digital invoices, and I guess solutions that help those merchants get up and running and manage their businesses in the world of payments. So yeah, it's good to be part of the team. I'm still on a pretty steep learning curve as far as acronyms and industry sort of domain knowledge is concerned, but I'm having a good time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll try not to throw too many acronyms at you, I promise, okay? If I do, then please pull me up on it. Guys, I'd like to just take things back a little bit. Now, you guys have been operational for 11 years. Now, that's a long time in the world of sort of fintech and payments. It probably wasn't even called fintech back then, right? It was just, you know, some technology that allowed you to make some payments. And then it's become kind of a sexy buzzword over the last 6 or 7 years. Matt, if you wind the clock back to when you guys were starting and we look at sort of the evolution of payments, right? So from a consumer perspective, but also from a merchant perspective, we'd have to go back to the worlds of checks, but let's move a little bit further on. So when, you know, point of sale devices came out and you would swipe your card, then the sort of next iteration of that was swipe your card, put in a PIN number, then it moved to, you know, PIN number only, then it moved to Matt, pull me up if I've missed anything here, right? It then moved on to sort of tap to pay. We're now seeing QR, you know, how to pay via QR payments. We're seeing, tap on phone to phone. There's a lot happening and a lot has happened. What's driven that from your perspective? Is it been more the consumer side, so more the consumer experience, or has it been more from the merchant side, or has it been something that's just been created and this kind of ease of payments?
I mean, it's a very interesting question. I think it's kind of like the chicken and egg question or, you know, comparison. I think that historically, especially in South Africa, we see, and we still are very much a cash dominated society, although there's been very good growth from digital. Historically, one of the biggest challenges was there wasn't an acceptance footprint for digital payments. So whilst we have a very mature banking sector, we actually have one of the best card issuance bases in emerging markets. So quite good distribution job done by the banks to get cards into the hands of consumers in South Africa. And obviously outside of the banks, things like the SASSA card, the Grant card, also quite a big player in driving that card issuance penetration, but there was always a huge gap on the acceptance side in South Africa. So obviously kind of your tier one type, your big supermarkets, retailers, etc., very good penetration. But as you start to move outside of that kind of formal tier one space into these frontier towns and formal landscape, township economy, very, very low acceptance base. And historically, that was because banks didn't really service SMEs. They're more interested in the bigger clients and they couldn't get the unit economics to make sense with the high touch banking type model for SMEs. So I think that was one of the big reasons why adoption was quite slow. Although we had big card issuance, what would happen? People get paid their money. They go stand in a very long ATM queue on the first of the month or the 31st of the month and withdraw generally all of that money into cash, take it home, put it under their mattress, or draw half of it and come back halfway through the month. Over time, I guess businesses like ourselves, our competitor Yoko, others, we've done a good job at growing that acceptance footprint outside of the traditional tier one retail environment. So I think consumers, obviously, it became a lot more convenient for them to be able to make payment once they built up trust in these MPOS devices, in the brands, which are obviously quite new brands in market, and they saw that it was a huge convenience play. Instead of having to go home if I've run out of cash or get in a taxi and actually get a lift to an ATM, I could pay for something in the store. So I think that started to happen pre-COVID. You saw this good organic growth year on year in our business. We had very healthy growth based on that. And then I think COVID was quite a key acceleration point where not only was there, I guess, the awareness from consumers that there was a lot more businesses that would be able to accept payments in their local environments, irrespective of size, so that go to those businesses, but also there was the safety aspect. I mean, we obviously have had, we have very high crime in South Africa. So, you know, these consumers started to realize that it fundamentally changed their risk profile if they weren't carrying cash. And then I guess the big catalyst was that with COVID spreading, people didn't want to touch cash. It suddenly became seen as this dirty thing. People were worried about, you know, picking up germs and COVID from cash. So I think there was a drive from both the merchant side, because they didn't want to be handling cash. They want their staff to be handling cash and getting COVID. And there was also this, you know, drive from the consumer side. And when those two worlds kind of came together with a much bigger acceptance footprint, it fundamentally changed the behavior in South Africa. And we've seen in that period, after the initial lockdowns, we saw very good growth and uptake, and almost growth in, I guess, the split between cash and digital payments or card payments in those businesses. I think another key catalyst has definitely been as people have understood and built trust in contactless and tap payments. It's obviously a lot quicker, a lot more convenient to make that payment than it was to do a card payment a few years back, where you were dipping a card and entering a PIN, which is quite a long process. And as people, as things like Apple Pay, Google Pay, wearables, you know, where you're tokenizing your card information on a device, and you can literally tap instantly and make that payment without even having to take your wallets out your pockets. I think that behavior change has again positively impacted change in behavior of both of consumer, and for merchants, they're happy to take those payments because it's quicker than cash, and there's less, I guess, shrinkage. There's less kind of, you know, there's less things for them to worry about in their business.
So from obviously post-COVID, or even during COVID, obviously we saw the online PSPs, you know, their numbers skyrocketed because, you know, everyone was relying on home ordering for shopping, and, you know, I know take a lot and everything like that. It sort of went crazy. You said that sort of post-COVID, there was a big demand again for sort of having something that didn't involve that sort of physical touch of cash. So you saw numbers sort of peak and grow over that period of time. What have you seen since COVID? Has it plateaued a little bit, or is there still sort of in the upward curve? What's happened?
Yeah, I mean, from a online perspective, I think there's definitely been a correction, and I think there's a lot of studies in that will speak to, obviously, that trend line has pulled back.
Yeah.
In the face-to-face space, that hasn't happened. So I think it's continued to grow organically quite nicely, and that, you know, we haven't seen either a dip in demand from businesses who want to be part of the acceptance ecosystem, nor have we seen kind of a pullback in the average card value through physical stores. We do also have, I guess, some e-com exposure, because we have launched a payment gateway product. We offer merchants PayLink functionality, invoice payments. That growth is incremental in our base, because they're very much people who are coming from a brick and mortar type environment who are moving into e-commerce versus being primarily e-commerce driven businesses. So that growth is more incremental. But in the face-to-face space, we've seen, you know, it's continued to have very healthy organic growth, both from appetite of businesses moving from cash to wanting to be part of this digital ecosystem, and the average values that are going through those businesses increasing quite healthily as well. So for us, yeah, it's been a good outcome. And I think if you look at South Africa, obviously it's very hard to get accurate statistics of how big this SME space is, because a lot of it is informal, a lot of it's unregistered, sole prop type businesses. You know, there's a bunch of studies, some in the range that we kind of settle on, somewhere between 2.5 to 3.5 million SMEs. Using those numbers, there's still probably somewhere between 80%, 85%, 75% is a range of those businesses that are still predominantly cash analog businesses and still moving into the digital economy, especially obviously the further you go away from the big three cities and the CBD areas, the more pronounced that acceptance gap is. And therefore, I guess that also obviously is fueling the continued appetite and demand from SMEs to move into this ecosystem. Because I think the other thing that's happened is they've realized accepting payments is part of what businesses like eCorka is able to offer. But once you're part of this digital economy, there's a whole bunch of, you know, other features that you unlock by being part of our ecosystem.
Yeah.
And Graham can probably speak to that more elegantly and in more detail than I can.
I'd love to delve into that a little bit more, actually. I think it's a really important topic in terms of the value-add services and actually the support that you give to SMEs or micro SMEs. Before we tackle that, Graham, a question for you. Forgive me for my directness, but what drives innovation at eCorka? Is it demand by merchants? Is it demand by consumers? Is it a case of, you know, a competitor is doing X, so actually we need to either better them or build the same type of offerings? What drives innovation?
Yeah, great question, Darren. I think it's a little bit of all of that. We spend a great deal of our time having a look at, I guess, the marketplace in terms of what competitors are doing. We spend a lot of time and energy on research and, I guess, testing concepts with merchants and figuring out, you know, where are those problems, what are their specific needs. So I think out of the sort of research that you do, looking at the marketplace, plus, you know, spending time, you know, part of our founding team, you know, Matt Ramsey, myself, you know, all of our new recruits, in fact, spend a day in the trade. So we try and get out as much as possible. And when you observe how these businesses are being managed and run, and I guess some of the, you know, quite basic tooling that these merchants have at their fingertips, you kind of open your eyes to the opportunities in terms of how technology can solve some of those problems. So, you know, I guess back to the question around if you're capturing all of these transactions, if all of these payments are flowing through your systems, and at a macro view, you can take a look at, you know, what's happening in different parts of the country, what's happening in different categories, why is a merchant, you know, in, let's say, I don't know, a township or an informal area outside of KZN doing a vastly different volume of trade compared to someone in Johannesburg, for example, when they're in the same category. Like, having a look at that data is really, important and allows us to take a look into that category and see what's happening. And back to the question of the value adds, you know, if we can start to build tooling on top of that data or show merchants, you know, what are their sales activities? How are they tracking month on month versus, you know, this year versus last year? How are they doing against peers in the same category? There are some really good insights and I guess value adds that we can play back to them. And that's, you know, that's part of, I guess, what we're starting to tackle. So it's, you know, getting the hygiene factor around, you know, payments flowing through your system and I guess through the entire ecosystem flowing back to those merchants. But also, what are the supporting tools and services and insights that you can start playing back to them in terms of how to better manage their businesses? So I guess that drives a lot of the innovation in terms of how we think about solving these problems for merchants. So, yeah, there was an interesting quote that I read recently that spoke about, you know, the sophistication of a society is, I guess, measured by the velocity or the flow of payments and how quickly those payments flow through an ecosystem. So part of our, I guess, obsession is not only can we process a payment, but how quickly can we settle that transaction back to a merchant? Because the faster you can settle it, the more utility you provide them, the better, I guess, their ability to use their working capital to run their business. So it's not just about taking the payments. It's also about the insights. It's about the settlements. It's about the ancillary services. So, yeah, I think that's how we think about, you know, the role that we play in terms of, you know, helping these merchants start, grow, manage their business, as we like to think about it.
I'd like to come back on some of the value-added services in a moment, Graham, if I may, or Matt. A question for you, based on the sort of market dynamics and the data that you have obtained or continue to obtain, do you find that merchants in different areas serving different demographics have requirements for different types of, again, we'll just focus on hardware for the time being. We'll move on to software in a minute. Do they have different requirements for hardware devices? Because I know, Ikoka, you've got a range of different hardware solutions that you can offer devices. Do you find that people in the informal economy are coming to you and saying, actually, I want a tap, or I want it NFC enabled, or I want to be able to do this, I want to be able to do that, or are they coming saying, listen, I just need to take payments, kind of give me the cheapest thing you've got? What are the conversations, what does the data tell you?
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
Yeah, I think that there is definitely a need for different hardware solutions, you know, in different categories. We've obviously seen quite a progression over the years in terms of hardware available. The earlier days, you know, in Matt and Ramsey's journey around sort of the plug-in devices, moving to sort of Bluetooth paired devices, which are great kind of, you know, tools to get you up and running and take payments. But if you're wanting to print a receipt, or if you're selling electricity or airtime and you're wanting to print out a voucher, a device like that is not really going to be suitable. So, you know, I guess you end up in a situation where you do have two or three different devices in your, you know, in your offering, not only from a functionality perspective, but also from a price point. So, you know, when we look at devices, we look at what are the entry points into a market? What is a merchant, you know, in an informal trading environment likely to spend on hardware? Because remember, our model is one in which it's an outright purchase. We're not renting you a machine that you're having to pay for every month, like a bank would typically, offer you. So, getting to the price point is quite an important decision for us. But also from a functionality perspective, you know, what is that merchant needing to use it for? So, you know, a restaurant versus a spaza shop, versus a professional service, some, you know, like a builder or a plumber, for example, who may be completely happy just to take a payment and send you an electronic invoice and not have to do a printout. I think those are considerations. If we look forward, you know, into where devices are going, it really is, I guess, taking advantage of platforms like Android touchscreen technology. So more and more, you know, you will see devices kind of leaning into taking advantage of those technologies and less about, you know, the Bluetooth pairing or the physical push button devices. So we'll see a shift away from that.
And Matt, from your perspective, I don't think we can ignore, you know, the power situation here in South Africa with load shedding. Some of the devices that you guys have built and are offered to market, how do they work in those types of situations where actually, you know, you can be down for 2 hours? Actually, at the moment, you know, we're down for sort of 4 hour blocks. But a merchant still needs to accept payments. Obviously, you know, there's batteries in these things, but how does it work in terms of cellular connectivity? If the grid's down, not the grid's down, but if the, the towers, are affected by load shedding, is there solutions, or is it just something that people need to consider when they're sort of running a business?
Very good question. It's definitely a real challenge. And, the latest device, which is kind of our flagship device, we launched towards the end of last year, the Ikoka Flyer, was built very much, you know, trying to help minimize the impact of load shedding for SMEs. So very powerful modem, running an Android operating system, dual SIM. So kind of seamlessly switches between networks. So obviously in some areas in load shedding, a battery will go down or a backup battery will go down. So, you know, on one day Vodacom isn't available, but MTN is, or vice versa. So dual SIM in those devices and very powerful modems that can operate off, I guess they don't have like huge packets of data that they're uploading. So I guess smart architecture from a code perspective to minimize the actual bandwidth needed. And then we also have Wi-Fi capability on those devices. You've really got three points of connectivity with a very high-end modem. And that's, those devices have done really well in load shedding. We find typically a lot of the kind of legacy bank devices, guys, you know, merchants are struggling with the 2, 4, 6, 8 hour load shedding in a day. And when they take one of these units and test it, there's like a big improvement in terms of uptime, and it kind of minimizes that variance. Also very good battery life in these units. And we've built the technology in such a way that we make the most of the battery life. So yeah, it is a real problem. It's also, even having said that, there are going to be places where, you know, if there is no connectivity, if you don't have an inverter and you don't have Wi-Fi, or you have very poor coverage across networks, you know, SMEs are just battling to trade. And in some case, even if they have the device and have connectivity, they don't have, the SMEs don't have the ability to go and invest in a generator or solar or backup power, and they actually can't turn the lights on in their shops and they have to close the doors. So it's definitely had, I think, a profound impact on I guess, GDP for small business owners, load shedding. I think we think it's probably depressed that sector by somewhere between kind of 20 to 25% over this calendar year. Wow. In other words, they're probably losing maybe up to between 20 to 25% of sales if you look at the impact of load shedding. And for a small guy with fairly shallow cash flow, like that's a big impact, especially when on the flip side, all your costs are increasing, you know, inflation is high, cost of capital is high, electricity is high. So yeah, it's been a tough year for SMEs. And obviously I guess like all South Africans, we eagerly await for things to improve, and in the interim we're doing whatever we can to try and minimize that kind of downside for them.
So that's kind of a segue into sort of my next topic, which is let's take an example. We have a micro merchant that's in a spaza shop, or is, you know, selling services or whatever it may be. They accept payments in person, and now they've sort of had an opportunity to sell products or services online. So I'll give you an example. I was at a market a couple of weeks ago, tried a little top of wine. It was amazing. I said, yeah, listen, I'll buy a case. She said, okay, well, I haven't got any with me. I'll send you an invoice, pay it, you know, send me proof of payment, and I'll ship it to you. Okay, that's great. Now, I haven't heard from her since. You know, maybe she didn't like my British accent. It could have easily been that. You know, how do you take what is a, you know, quite a traditional, you know, I sell to you, you give me cash, I put the cash there, or I then go and buy, you know, some more products. How do you take that from in-person? How do you help your merchants from taking that sort of in-person payment to growing their business, to offering something that is more online, which could be quite, I imagine, quite a daunting prospect for someone who's going, hang on a minute, how do I sell things through a computer? And I'm not belittling, I'm just sort of focusing on sort of financial literacy and some of the other challenges we have here on the continent. What do you guys do to help your merchants grow their business? I think a lot of people, you know, you speak to all the banks and they're like, yeah, we help you grow your business. Well, I've been with a certain bank, going back to three letter acronyms, but I won't mention who that is, for a number of years. And, you know, I think I've only just met, you know, a human being that can actually help me. And that was for a number of years. So how are you guys helping your merchants?
Yeah, I think we've got I'll give the quick overview, Matt, and you can fill in there. I think we've got a couple of solutions, Darren. The first is we've spent probably the last 18 months building out, I guess, some of these, you know, online payment methods. So for your example, the merchant who's maybe sitting in a, you know, an informal trading environment and maybe doesn't have a website yet, we've got a product called a PayLink, which allows them to essentially capture an amount, send that link via WhatsApp or SMS to their customer. It still uses card rails, so the assumption there is that the customer has a credit card or a debit card or a bank account of sorts.
Sure.
And that customer can then do an instant EFT or a credit card transaction to pay for those goods. So without having a website, there's a digital payment method there. There's no physical card machine required. The merchants really just got to set themselves up with a merchant account, and they've got access to these payment links. And really, it's a free to use service. I guess the next step up is, a more sophisticated version of that in the form of a digital invoice, which, mm-hmm. would use the same payment methods. And then for that merchant who maybe has set up a website on, and typically we've targeted the low end, online presences. So the entry levels, your website builders. So typically like a Wix or a WordPress environment where you're going in, you're paying a subscription, you're setting up your products and services, and, with very little developer knowledge or, engineering firepower, you can set up a basic website, and you can plug a gateway, plug an Encorker gateway into that website and take payments online. So I think, we cater for the person who's maybe doesn't have an online presence yet, all the way through to that person who maybe has set up a web presence. And I guess the evolution for us is just, further payment methods, on top of that existing online platform. So, for example, we're about to launch what we're calling our buy buttons. So even if you've set up let's say an Instagram page and you want, or a Facebook page, and you just want to put a button on that page, it'll use the same rails. Your customers will be able to hit that buy button and do a credit card or debit card or an instant EFT transaction using the same technology. So I think that's solutions that we're looking at. I guess the evolution is just building on top of that foundation that we've already got.
Matt, I just want to build on that if I can, just from what Graham was saying, but also what you were saying a little bit earlier, which was around, I'll call it sort of underbanked. Okay, so as you mentioned, a lot of 80% of the population here in South Africa have a bank account. They get paid their salary, they go to the ATM, they withdraw that. That still happens. Okay, it sounds like there's quite similar process that happens with micro SMEs, right? So they get the merchant accepts a payment. The payment either goes into the bank account or goes into cash, and it's kind of liquid again, right? It's not staying in the digital form. In order for one of your merchants to have an Encorker merchant account, do they need to have a bank account, and do they need to go through a KYC process? And if so, is that a barrier to mass adoption of multiple sort of payment adoption sort of in a wider sense?
Yeah. So they do have to have a bank account, a South African bank account, but it doesn't have to be a business account. So it could be a personal account, a sole prop account. And in terms of, we've worked very hard from a technology perspective to make that process super seamless and fast for the SME. So it's if you go through kind of a self-service onboarding journey, you can sign up with us in 5 minutes. In the background, we're doing all of the things we need to do from a KYC perspective to validate that you are who you say you are with Home Affairs and with a whole bunch of credit bureaus, et cetera. But it's a very easy, seamless process for you as an SME. Having said that, it still does create, some level of friction in that you have to be committed enough to go through that sign-up process.
Yeah.
And our goal is obviously we have to comply with the regulatory framework that the schemes and the banks have in place. But we're doing it in a way where, we're making that as easy and seamless as possible. If you think back, I think back to when I was a business owner prior to Corker, the amount of paperwork we had to fill out to get a card machine, it was like a short novel. It was probably like 20 pages of physical paperwork plus 8 documents, and you had to get everyone from your mother to your cousin to sign proof of X, whereas now, as I say, it's 5 minutes. There's no paperwork required. It's all an app. It's very similar to how you would sign up for Airbnb or Uber to like validate from a know your customer perspective that you are who you are. But it is a barrier. And I guess the other barrier is also, and coming back to the initial question around soft pause or tap on phone, is, even though we have very affordable entry level devices, there's still an upfront commitment. And for merchants who are, let's say, grassroots, entrepreneurs who have been brought up in a cash only society, they have an inherent distrust of legacy banks because they haven't had a good experience. That initial upfront commitments for them, for some of them, it is still a barrier. So I think hence why we've invested quite a lot of time and energy to launching our own tap on phone and soft pause functionality, with the idea really being that, if we can bring someone into our universe without any upfront commitments, almost like this freemium experience that you would get for many software as a service type packages. So you download the Corker app, you don't have to pay us anything upfront. You go through a very seamless onboarding process and app, and then you can trade. That obviously increases our top of funnel activity. It exposes these SMEs to being able to accept a card payment from a customer. And, hopefully it grows the ecosystem. Having said that, though, when we read a lot of the articles and commentary around tap on phone and soft pause, it still is very early days. Mm-hmm. And we're not convinced that it's the, it's the silver bullets that everyone thinks it is. We think it's part of the broader solution. It's part of what will help drive, broader adoption in this ecosystem. But there's a lot of businesses that they need a physical device. If they have high volume trade through their business, they're going to at a point in time need to migrate up the food chain to have a device. But it's a great way to be able to experience a card payment for the first time, or if you infrequently take a card payment from a customer, it's a great entry into the digital world. So for us, that's really the bet, is that, we can help bring these people into our ecosystem. We can deliver a whole bunch of value. We can build trust with them. And for some of them, tap on phone will be a great solution for them and they'll never have to change. Whereas others, based on the size of their business, the frequency of payments they need to take, whether a business owner is at the store or not, how many locations he has, then he might actually need a device that has long battery life, that has a dual SIM connectivity. There's different use cases, and we think tap on phone is definitely going to help bring more people into the ecosystem, but it's not like the magic fix. There's a whole bunch of other stuff that you need to get right to drive adoption.
Let's just talk adoption. I'm pleased you finished your sentence with that. From a consumer perspective, are you seeing that consumers in here in South Africa are comfortable in tapping their phone onto someone else's phone and that affecting a payment? Or do you have any data on that, or just on sort of feedback from merchants?
Yeah, I mean, it's very... I mean, Graham can add more color, but I think for me, having seen how MPOS devices, when we launched those devices and you had small merchants who had this card machine that you linked via Bluetooth or plugged into a phone, consumers were at first, there was, what is this thing? How does it work? Can I trust it? And obviously now we go, as a consumer, you go into businesses, you see that you don't even have that thought. You trust that type of payment technology and mechanism. But it took a while. And a lot of education and work from schemes, from ourselves, from other players in the market to create that trust and education, both on the merchant and the consumer side. And with soft pause, it's the same thing. I think it's still a very new form factor. It's a new type of paying. There's a lot of people that are still feeling their way out. Yeah. And then there's others. There's the early adopters, the young people where, for them, it's a non-issue. They just, it's another form factor. They've been playing with a wearable anyway. They don't even think about it twice, but it depends on depends on age, depends on you know, where you sit on the spectrum of technology, of whether you do or don't trust it. But there is still a big job to be done from a scheme perspective, from a bank perspective, from players like ourselves, to create broad awareness and education that this is safe, it is cool to do it. And then, you know, there will be that tipping point where adoption just comes, as it has done with contactless payments in SA, as it did with MPOS devices. Gee, I'm not sure if there's anything you want to add from your side.
No, I think you've nailed it. I mean, the bottom line, still very early days. I mean, as Matt said, I think we've got, you know, as a fraction of our total volume, it's still very, very small. We've got some very active merchants. You know, you'd be surprised. I think we've got one or two merchants that are doing sort of 30 or 40 grand a month through their phones. Wow. Which, when you take a step back, that's pretty significant. That's sort of high volume, but very, very early days. Growing nicely month on month, but still the tip of the iceberg in terms of like breaking out into mainstream. And the points around education, I think is a big thing. Like, you know, why am I tapping your phone and not your card machine? I think there is that hurdle to cross still. Yeah. But also the trust part about it. You know, it's just, you know, what is on your phone? What can't I see? So there is a job to be done in terms of, I guess, crossing those hurdles. But as an entry into our world, as a test, you know, can I sign up with Ikoka? Will I get settled? Will my, you know, funds flow? It's a great mechanism and I guess an entry point into our world, and for us to then build that relationship. And yeah, as that merchant grows, let's equip them with the right tools to take transactions. So yeah,
I guess again, when you're talking sort of cost and unit economics, you know, to give everyone an Android phone or an iPhone or whatever it may be, you know, with the capability to accept payments, is going to be a hell of a lot more expensive than giving them a device, right? Because typically, you know, these phones, you know, 10 grand plus, right? Whereas you can go and buy a device for a fraction of that. But I suppose if you're a micro merchant, if you're, you know, you're at markets and what have you, a sole trader, kind of makes sense, right? You've always got your phone with you. You can take that payment instantly. You don't need to sort of worry about, oh, I've, you know, left the device at home. I don't think many people go anywhere without their phones these days. So interesting perspective. I think also when you're a slightly larger retailer or merchant, you know, are you going to equip all your staff with a phone? Probably not, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's very well suited to certain categories. I mean, you think about the job that, I don't know, an electrician or a plumber is doing. You know, they may be doing a handful of jobs a day. Maybe they're taking three or four transactions a day. Yeah. For them to walk around with their mobile phone, which is on their, you know, it's on their body at all times, not have to carry a card machine. It's a fantastic category and use case. But for other traders, you're running a spaza shop or a coffee shop, there's no way you're going to use your phone. It's just the volume of transactions going through there, the battery life, your personal device kind of moving around the shop, it is impractical. So I think, yeah, right tool for the job. You know, there's good growth there and there's good opportunity, but in certain instances, it's just not feasible.
Okay. Before I let you guys go, because I've kept you for far longer than I told you I'd keep you for, where are you seeing competition? Obviously, we've got the other POS providers here in South Africa. You mentioned one or two of them. Are you seeing sort of more competition now from the banks and from the telcos who are moving into this space? Or actually, you still feel there's a positioning for a specialist like Ikoka to operate domestically in this market?
Yeah, I mean, it's a noisy space, I think, payments in general, right? In terms of competition, I guess there's different themes. There's definitely a telco theme. There's obviously a big bank theme, but adversely, there's other banks who are realizing, actually, this isn't our strength. Let's partner with someone who is a specialist, who can do it, you know, for us and provide a really good service to our SME customer base. So, I mean, we've signed partnerships recently with Investec and Bank Zero and one or two others that are brewing, where they're saying, guys, like, Ikoka's got this, you know, really deep product stack from a payments acceptance perspective.
Yeah.
And it's complementary to what we provide on the core banking and ancillary banking services side. So I think in that space, there's maybe in some banks at least like a change of thinking and like, let's rather partner with someone who's super good in the space, which obviously we're very open to, and we're looking for partnerships and growing that distribution footprint. And likewise in the telco space, there's two different parties. There's ones who are trying to do it themselves and others who are looking to partner. And you know, we're happy to work with the latter. And then, yeah, I guess there's also people who are moving from like the prepaid aggregation space into payments. And then, you know, we're also moving across from payments into prepaid aggregation as well. So yeah, I think it is a noisy space, but I think despite that, there's still a big unaddressed market in SA, you know, and our growth is stronger than it's ever been. I mean, August was our, you know, we onboarded the most merchants in a month we've ever onboarded. Wow. In a depressed economy. So I think despite all that noise, there's definitely still appetite. And I'm pretty sure that like one or two of our key competitors, they're also seeing healthy growth. So I don't, you know, I think it's a market that's big enough for multiple players to have a space and win. For us, thinking wise, we're moving beyond just payments. Like payments was a great place to start. It's a very good hook. It gives us very rich data, but we're really trying to position ourselves as, I guess, a platform for SMEs where, you know, when they think about running their business, they think about eCorka. And yes, we can offer omni-channel payments acceptance, but there's a whole bunch of other value adds that we bring to the table. When you put those things together, it's quite differential to what they would get from a traditional bank or what they would get from a telco. And that's really our focus domestically. And then we do definitely have ambition to look outside of SA, although there's still big market opportunity in SA, and that's our primary focus. We're also looking at, you know, how do we take what we've built and are building and replicate that in other markets where there's a need.
Fantastic. Well, Matt, Graham, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put some links at the bottom here. So anyone on YouTube, it'll be down here. If you're listening on sort of Spotify or Apple podcast, then the links will be in the description. So you can do a bit more research on eCorka, on Matt and on Graham. I'll put you guys, your LinkedIn links as well, so people can look you up. But I wanted to thank you. So thanks for coming on, guys. It's been really interesting. I think this is an important part of A, the economy, but B, the fintech ecosystem, which is, as you said, Matt, it's kind of, you know, it's the starting point. Everything happens from, you know, acceptance of payments, then all the other value-added services. I'd love to get you guys back on maybe in a few months' time and talk about some of the other sort of value-added services, because I appreciate we didn't sort of delve into those, but there's some super interesting things, especially the pay by invoice, because it drives me mad every time I get an invoice from a supplier and I have to manually go in and type in the bank account and the name, and it just drives me mad. I just think I just be able to click and pay. It's got to be a lot easier. So clearly you guys have got a solution for that, and we'll put some links down here as well. But guys, thank you. Matt, I'll let you get back to sunning yourself in KZN. And Graham, it's a bit cold and chilly out here in Joburg today. So I'll let you go and put a jersey on.
Thank you, Darren.
Thank you, Darren.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us, Darren.
My pleasure.
Have a good day. Cheers.
Thanks. And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.